Advanced Study, presenting a critical forum on Social Security reform with speakers including Bill Spriggs, Economic Policy Institute in Washington, D.C., Jeffrey Brown, recently appointed to the Bush Administration Commission on Social Security, Richard Kaplan from the U of I College of Law, Mark Leff, U of I Department of History, and others on Wednesday, February 23rd from 7 to 9 p.m. at the Levis Faculty Center. For more information, go to www.cas.uiuc.edu.
Good morning. Welcome back to the second hour of Focus 580. This is our morning talk program. My name is David Inge. Glad to have you with us. Producing the show, Harriet Williamson and Martha Deal, and Jason Croft is at the controls this morning. In this hour of the program, we'll be talking with someone who is quite well known as a commentator on hip-hop music and culture. His name is Bakari Kitwana. He's authored a book entitled The Hip-Hop Generation, Young Blacks and the Crisis in African-American Culture. He is former executive editor of The Source. That's a magazine of hip-hop music, culture, and politics. His writings have appeared in The Source and a lot of other places, including Village Voice, The Progressive. He has authored a column on hip-hop and youth culture for the Cleveland Plain Dealer and has lectured on hip-hop a lot of places around the country, including Harvard and Columbia and Vassar and University of Rochester. He's consultant on hip-hop for the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame. He's also the author of a forthcoming book titled Why White Kids Love Hip-Hop. And he's here visiting in Champaign-Urbana, his visit sponsored by the African American Studies and Research Program. He's going to be giving a talk this afternoon, talking about the significance of the legacy of Malcolm X for the hip-hop generation. That's at 112 Chemistry Annex on South Matthews in Urbana. And I'm assuming that it's open to anybody who is interested in stopping by. You want to hear what he has to say. That would be great. And, of course, here on the program, questions, comments are welcome. 333-9455, toll-free, 800-222-9455. Thanks very much for being here.
It's good to be here.
Just to start sort of with the basic idea to start out about talking about the hip-hop generation. It's a term that you came up with or somebody came up with as a way of describing a certain segment of American youth that maybe there wasn't good term for. And, you know, we like to have these kind of convenient labels that we can put on things.
Right.
So here you're essentially what this is a term that tries to describe young people, young African-American people primarily, but not just, who came along after the civil rights era.
Right. Well, the term had been floating around for some time. When I was an editor at The Source, we incorporated it into the style to refer to young African-Americans. And when I wrote the book, The Hip-Hop Generation, there had been a study that was done by an organization called Motivational Educational Entertainment based out of Philadelphia. And they had done a study about 10 years ago with the title The Hip-Hop Generation in it, Reaching the Hip-Hop Generation, I think it was called. But in terms of the book, I wanted to write a book about young African-Americans born after the Civil Rights Movement. And, you know, what do we call that? So as I look back at, you know, the World War II generation and the baby boom generation and just kind of looking for those major social indicators for this younger generation, one of the major defining variables has been hip hop.
Yeah. Well, I think you also make the argument that just as the title of this other book suggests, that interest in hip hop music and culture goes beyond just young African-American
right.
people. It's popular with a lot of young people and
right.
not even necessarily young ones, although maybe more young ones. So it starts to become something a little bit bigger than that.
Right. Well, I think that with the book, The Hip-Hop Generation, I wanted to write a book about young African-Americans born after the Civil Rights Movement. In terms of young people being drawn to hip-hop, most certainly we're talking about people that are not just African-American. And so with the new book, Why White Kids Love Hip-Hop, I'm trying to kind of venture out into some of the other territory. I think that most certainly when you're talking about hip-hop, people use the expression the hip-hop nation or the hip-hop community mm-hmm. To describe, you know, general hip-hop listeners regardless of age, class, race, whatever. I think that when we're talking about a hip-hop voting bloc, most certainly we're talking about, you know, young people, some as young as 18 and some into their 40s, who identify with hip hop on some level. Those people who make Eminem go 1.7 times platinum in a week, That's we're talking about a hip hop voting block. And so you start to see how the conversation gets a little bit more broad.
Yeah. Well, and that also gets us from music to politics, because that's also something that I know you're interested in. And you have written a lot about the fact that here, if you're talking about people who are interested in hip hop and who identify with that, that we're talking about a significant number of people that if you, and then you would have to say, as you've said, and a lot of other people have said, if it's possible to mobilize that group, if it's possible to get them politically active, to vote, but not just to vote, to be active in other sorts of ways, you know, that you're talking about the potential of a significant movement. And you've made this argument that particularly for African-American kids who have come along after the civil rights movement, here there's something that it might actually be possible to mobilize around that would be as significant, maybe more significant than the civil rights movement. I probably a lot of people of your parents' age and older would probably not be real happy to hear something like that.
Well, I mean, I think that there is people that don't understand hip hop beyond it as a music phenomena, as a pop music phenomena, would balk at the idea of a comparison to the civil rights movement. Some people would say you're talking about apples and oranges. In terms of hip hop, you're talking about a musical arts movement. In terms of the civil rights movement, you're talking about a political and a social movement. But I think that what we're talking about, those of us who are engaged in the hip hop arts cultural movement, as well as the emerging hip hop political movement, we're talking about a generation of young people who've grown up on hip hop, who have seen hip hop as a cultural phenomenon at a grassroots local level have a tremendous impact on young people. And if you are trying to reach young people today, whether you're an educator, whether you're in the church, or whether you're in politics, those of us who have grown up on hip hop understand that hip hop is that tool to do that, and that there has been a cultural movement created by hip hop at a local level that is the infrastructure. That is the infrastructure that's critical to this emerging political movement. And a good analogy would be historically it's been the black church in the African-American community, most certainly in the context of the civil rights movement. The black church was the infrastructure for the civil rights movement. Well, the local hip hop community, the collective of graffiti artists and break dancers, spoken word poets, local party promoters, MCs and mixtape DJs, that collective of individuals is the infrastructure created by the cultural movement of hip hop that young hip hop activists are tapping into to move a political agenda. And we saw a lot of this most recently with the election of 2004. At a national level, but this has been going on at a local level for at least a decade.
Yeah. Well, there you touch on something that I want to ask about, and because I know that that people involved in the hip-hop community have been interested in trying to organize politically and then also get people who are interested in hip-hop music and culture to organize. And there was, in fact, there was a hip-hop convention that took place last year. I guess it was in the spring.
June
of 2004. Right. Then I read some stories about that. And there were people predicting, I think maybe you and other people were predicting, that here there was a you could actually talk about a kind of a voting block, about a hip-hop voting block that was there was the possibility of mobilizing this voting block, and at least, if not mobilizing them for a particular candidate, getting them to vote.
Right.
Do you feel that now in the election of 2004 that the hip-hop community had a noticeable, a recognizable kind of impact?
Absolutely. I mean, I think, you know, one of the problems that we're struggling against is for the vast majority still of Americans, there are not issues on the nation's agenda that people are excited about, that they feel are going to change their lives in a substantive manner once that election is over. So I think that's a part of the problem we're dealing with. This last election, we had the biggest turnout since 1968 in this country across all age groups. People more excited about what was going to happen in politics in this country for the first time in a long time. So in terms of a hip hop voting bloc, I was one of the founders of the National Hip Hop Political Convention. And we believe that young people, if the issues are discussed and packaged in a way that appeal to them, would be more interested in electoral politics. But I think that a part of the equation is the what politicians are talking about, the issues that matter to us as a generation have to be on the agenda. I don't think that it's a matter of politicizing young people. I think that young people are already politicized by public policy of the 80s and 90s. So it's a matter of putting issues on the national agenda that matter to young people. So a part of what we saw happen was that didn't happen. So the fact that young people didn't turn out in young people turned out in record numbers, but they did not maybe did not have an effect that people wanted to have, in part because you still have a large contingency of young people, just as you do Americans across all age groups, who are checking out of the who are just checking out of the process because they feel that the issues aren't on the agenda that matter to them and they're going to bring about change in their lives. And a good example, I mean, I think that the Democratic Party still is not doing a good job of reaching young people or even their progressive base. And so I think that what you saw was a lot of young people who, let's say, for example, around the question of living wage, the Democratic Party offered $7 an hour. Most people know $7 an hour is not going to lift you out of poverty. And so I think that we have a situation where we have a Democratic and a Republican Party that are both further right than the masses of American people. And I think that's a part of the problem. So I think in terms of a hip hop voting bloc, the difficulty remains we've got to get candidates that are speaking to issues and parties that are aligned with where young people are and what matters to them in their day-to-day lives.
Yeah. Let me introduce again, just for anybody who might have tuned in here, our guest, Bukhari Kidwana. He's written a lot and spoken a lot about hip-hop music and culture, probably one of the country's best-known commentators on the subject. He's the author of the book, The Hip-Hop Generation, Young Blacks and the Crisis in African-American Culture. That's Basic Books, and the book is still in print, so if you want to go out and read the book. Also has one coming out soon to be titled Why White Kids Love Hip-Hop, and has contributed for a lot of different publications, The Source, of which he was executive editor at one point. That's a magazine of hip-hop music, culture, and politics. His writings also appeared in the Village Voice and in the Cleveland Plain Dealer, and he's talked about the subject quite a lot on university campuses and on radio and television. He's a consultant on hip-hop for the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame. He's here visiting the campus. We'll be giving a talk this afternoon, and questions here on the program are welcome. 333-9455. Toll free 800-222-9455. Do you know when the book, when White Kids Love Hip-Hop's coming out?
May 1st.
May 1st. Okay, very good. We have a caller to talk with here on our line one. Let's do that in Champaign. Hello.
Good morning.
Yes.
There's two things I wonder if your guests would care to address. One is that there's a relationship between hip-hop designers. I haven't been cool since the 60s myself, but there's a relationship between this music and, like, the prison situation, which is a good political point, I think, because we incarcerate in this country more people than any other industrialized country in the world, I guess, percentage-wise. And most of them are, I guess, a big percentage of them are black. But the other point is, I remember a book I got a long time ago that talks about toasts, and it was a collection of these, they call them toasts, they're sort of monologues, I guess you might call them. And I don't know if your guest knows those or if you talk about the relationship to them, to the music, and I just hang up and listen. Thanks a lot.
Okay.
Okay, we get into the hip-hop aficionado arena. toast is a form of rapping. Some say come out of the Caribbean. I talk about this some in my first book, The Rap on Gangster Rap. But in terms of, but there's a book called Yes, Yes, Y'all, written by Charlie Ahern, that gets into this in some more detail. There's another new book out right now by Jeff Chang. The book is called Can't Stop, Won't Stop, A History of the Hip-Hop Generation. Also gets into some of this detail that you're talking about, connecting this history of rap into a pre-African-American context. There's a young rapper out of Oakland. His name is Boots Riley. The rap group is called The Coup. And he talks about this in some detail, as he lectures around the country. What you're talking about in terms of the hip hop and the prison situation, I think this is a big issue because I think for young people, our society has changed dramatically. In 1970, there were around 200,000 people totally incarcerated in this country. By the year 2000, you have over 2 million people incarcerated, nearly 1 million of whom are African American. This is one of the major impacts on us as a generation in terms of this incarceration thing. And I think that globalization plays a big role in that. And I'm going to talk about that some tonight, this afternoon. But I also think for young people, in addition to incarceration, one of the biggest responses that society has had for us has been medication. And I get into this in the new book, Why White Kids Love Hip Hop, that as a society, when young people have been seen, whenever something has been deemed a youth problem, as a society and as a government, our responses have been limited to either incarceration or medication with this generation. And so we see young people finding refuge and taking refuge in hip hop.
You're talking a little bit earlier about the fact that you felt that people of this generation, this group of people that we're talking about, there are certain kind of issues that they were really concerned with and that they were hoping they could hear politicians talk about. I mean, that would be one way of engaging them in a political process. And if they don't feel engaged, it may well be because politicians are not talking about those issues. Now, we just touched on one of them.
Right.
And there are some others, though. Are there some really basic things that you would say, look, these are basic issues that people who are part of this generation or this block
right.
would say, okay, these are important. These are the things we want to hear leadership
Absolutely.
Talk about.
Absolutely. One of the things that we did with the National Hip Hop Political Convention, we went around the country and we set up local organizing committees that were based, that were comprised of graffiti art collectives, breakdancing collectives, spoken word DJs, etc., rap artists, mixtape DJs, hip hop activists in these local communities. And we said, you all should select delegates and send them to this national convention. And so that's what we did. And every delegate was required to register 50 voters. And so we came to this convention in Newark in June, and we drafted a national hip hop political agenda, which was based on a 5-point agenda. It was education, living wage, incarceration, healthcare. And one of the issues was also an end to recruiting young people for the military in public spaces. So I think that the issues are very well defined. The issues that are devastating on young people in terms of education, we're definitely being devastated by the fact that we have an educational system at a public school, at the high school, public school level, that once worked because you had a manufacturing industry that was based here. So when you graduated from high school, you could move into a job that paid you a living wage. You could buy a home. You could take your family on vacation. You could have health care benefits. But with our generation, this generation born after the civil rights movement, the jobs that exist that are working class jobs do not provide that. Many young people are still living in their parents' homes. The best job option for many young people graduating out of high school today is to go into the military and end up, you know, fighting in Iraq. Many young people don't want to be there. They're there because it was an economic option and they're loyal American citizens. They know what they signed up for, so they're carrying out their duty. I was interviewed in the New York Times. The article ran yesterday in Sunday's The Arts page, talking about young people who are in the military who are rapping to articulate their frustration. In the book, The Hip Hop Generation, I have a chapter where I talk about these job options facing young people. And I talked to soldiers, and many of them talked about the fact that they didn't want to fight in these wars, but that the military was the best job option that they had. Some of them were supplementing their income with things like food stamps. Some of them were supplementing their income by selling drugs. And I think that as a society and as a government, we owe more to our young people as a job option than going into the military.
Let's talk with somebody else here. We got another caller, line one, also Champaign. Hello.
Hello. I'm wondering about the relationship between hip hop and the importance of Islam among young African American people, and whether there's a subgroup of hip hop that is very influenced by Islam, or the whole of it, or part of it, or whatever. And I'm wondering about its relationship to incarceration and conversion to Islam in prison, and then also maybe its relationship to politics and these other issues that you're talking about. I think you listed 5 issues or something. Could you talk about that in any way?
Yeah, this is good stuff.
Okay. Okay.
It's a lot. In terms of a connection between hip-hop and Islam, I think that there are these ideas floating around.
Yeah.
That is a negative of thing. There's a history of young people, most certainly the 5% Nation influence within hip-hop, which is really strong, and Islam really strong in hip-hop going back into the 80s. But I think more recently, you have so many young people in and out of the prison system. And within that system, young people joining associations for a variety of reasons. And I talk about this in the hip-hop generation, that many times these prison conversions are just that, prison conversions. And then when young people are then out of prison, then whatever that group that they were in with in prison, they kind of fall out of. So, I mean, I think that there is a relationship, but I don't think the relationship is as strong as it's been played up in the media. I'm going to talk some this afternoon about the influence of the 5% Nation.
What do you mean by the 5% Nation?
The 5% Nation is a organization that came, a philosophical school of thought that came out of the Nation of Islam,
mm-hmm.
in the 60s and 70s. You had a big influence of these people on the streets of New York in the early 80s, having a big influence on young people who were also on the streets, who many were younger people at the time when, if you were a young person and you were involved or caught committing crimes such as running drugs for drug dealers, this is the pre-super predator era, those people were not sent to prison. And so you had many of these people on the street at the same time as the 5% Nation is on the street, and incorporating a lot of the language of the 5% Nation into hip hop. And so that is a real phenomenon, I think, that we see in terms of an Islamic influence within hip hop.
Right. But there are just so many branches of Islam, whether it's a more Orthodox Middle Eastern or it's the Nation of Islam or
right.
some American kind of civil rights conglomeration.
Right. Well, I think you get a lot of different Islamic influences within hip hop, more so in the 80s
mm-hmm.
than now.
Mm-hmm.
Some of this is documented in magazines like The Source mm-hmm. and in Vibe, where they've done detailed stories, talking about the influence of Islam within hip hop. Mm-hmm. But I think in terms of the prison context, you're talking about something a little bit different.
Right. Well, it seems that Islam can be very influential in social movements, and I guess as a counter movement maybe to something that is so dominant. But as you said, sometimes this can be taken very negatively, and I'm just wondering whether the political organization that is associated with hip-hop is seen as some kind of threat and then associated with Islam, et cetera, you know. I think you get my drift.
I think you get some fanatical mainstream commentators on the right.
Right.
Who make these wild associations with hip hop. There was I mentioned the rap artist Boots Riley mm-hmm. of The Coup. In 2001, they had an album come out where on the cover was a bombing of the World Trade Center, which was before this cover was done. Before the World Trade Center bombing, and there was a newspaper, I believe it was a newspaper in London, I can't remember the name, who made a connection between Boots Riley and some Islamic radicals, And Boots Riley is not Muslim.
Oh, okay.
And so, I mean, I think you see kind of where this stuff all kind of starts to go.
Right. Okay, well, thank you very much.
Okay,
right, thanks
thank
for the call. We're about the midpoint here. Other questions, comments are certainly welcome. Again, let me introduce our guest, Bakari Kidwana. He's the author of several books, including The Rap on Gangster Rap, that was his first, The Hip Hop Generation, Young Blacks and the Crisis in African-American Culture, and one that will be coming out soon, titled Why White Kids Love Hip Hop. He's written a lot about hip hop music and culture for a variety of publications. He was a former executive editor of The Source, a magazine of hip-hop music, culture, and politics. He has been a commentator, been widely interviewed on television, on radio. His writings have appeared in a number of places, The Source, Village Voice, The Progressive. He's lectured at college campuses around the country. He's here to talk about the significance of Malcolm X and his legacy for the hip-hop generation. And that will be today at 4 o'clock this afternoon at 112 Chemistry Annex at 505 South Matthews on the U of I campus. His visit here is sponsored by the African American Studies and Research Program. Questions, too, again, here on the program are welcome. 333-9455, toll free 800-222-9455. We talked a little bit earlier about what, you know, the things that you have written and other people have written about the possibility that you have here organized around hip hop the potential of significant kind of political block. At least here it's a kind of a force of people that you could mobilize. And the central sort of thing that they identify with and pulls them together is hip hop music and culture.
Right.
And now the thing is though that there are a lot of folks within the African American community and elsewhere, people who are a little bit older, like over 50, and who maybe are concerned about that, and these kinds of comparisons between civil rights movement and the hip-hop movement,
right,
and would point to hip-hop and say, you know, we got a problem with some of the values
right
that this music portrays and advances. And actually, I know that you've said the same thing. Yeah. you know, it is. We do need to talk about this. It's right. Not necessarily, you know, you are not necessarily going to endorse a lot of the values of the music. But, I mean, I guess I wonder how it is you think about that and how you talk about that with people who make that criticism, you know, particularly those people who would have who lived through the civil rights movement and knew what it was like before and knew what it was like after,
right,
who then, you know, could be the parents and maybe even the grandparents of this generation that we're talking about.
Yeah, it's a hard thing. You know, I think that one of the issues is this. One of the things I do in the hip hop generation is I look at differences between the civil rights generation of African Americans and the hip hop generation and some of those things that make us different. I talk about this globalization of the economy and its outgrowths as a part of what makes us so different. You know, this rise of incarceration, this blending of prison culture and street culture with black youth culture so that the lines are blurred between where one ends and the other begins. I think a lot of this stuff is hard for the older generation to process because they haven't lived through it in the same way. So they say, well, you guys are complaining about education. You're complaining about jobs. You know, this is the same thing. You know, we dealt with these issues. So why are you complaining about it? And why do you get to be so vulgar? And why do you have to use the N-word so much? Mm-hmm. I think that the response, I did a panel discussion. It was a conversation between the civil rights generation and the hip hop generation that took place in New York a few weeks ago. It's a BET documentary that's going to run on the 28th of February. It included Cornel West and Michael Eric Dyson and some of the older folk older than them, longtime NAACP advocates. And, you know, some of these issues, you know, came up. And I think one of the things that came out of the conversation was that for the younger generation, there's a lot more comfort in presenting the contradictions and accepting these contradictions as a part of life. Whereas for the older generation, there seems to be more of a tendency to just put the best foot forward. Not that these contradictions didn't exist, but that they were more interested in putting the best foot forward. And I think that that's one of those shifts that has taken place in the African-American community. And I also do, you know, concede I think that there is, and I'm going to talk about this some today in this Malcolm X discussion, there is a spiritual dearth amongst this younger generation where spirituality has taken a back seat. And I think that this is a national phenomenon, not just an African-American one.
Yeah. Well, let's talk with some more folks. We have someone here on calling on cell phone, so we'll get them on our line four. Hello.
Hello. Yeah. How are you all?
Good.
You just touched on a little bit on why I called. I grew up on hip-hop, and, you know, I was used to the conscious rap with, you know, the KRS-Ones, Eric B. and Rakim, Public Enemy. And it seems like now that the conscious rap has been put on the back burner, and it's more of a materialistic type of thing. That's being more glorified now. And I just wanted to know if you saw the same things that I'm seeing with hip-hop.
I think in some cases, I think there's a strong argument to be made for what you're saying. I think a lot of times we have to situate that discussion into how the music industry has changed and how the hip-hop industry has changed. And I think if you the time period that you're talking about, a lot of that music was being published by independent record labels. I think now we've gone through the mid-'80s and the late-'80s with the consolidation of the music industry. And in that process, and many of these independent labels were bought out or driven out of business. And so you have a formula that has been established within the industry, really extending back to, I'd say, 88, 89, where the formula was kind of established with the success of rap groups like N.W.A. And if you look at N.W.A., you look at The Game, and you look at 50 Cent, and you're talking about a span of about 15 years, 16 years. There's not a radical difference in what those artists are saying. So I think that there is a decline in the consciousness in terms of the dominant hip-hop message. But I think that the conscious message is still out there. We're just hearing more of the formula is being heard and is seen for many artists who are coming out of poor backgrounds, who are getting into the rap game and seeing it as their one opportunity to make money in America. And, you know, many of them aren't willing to take a chance to do something that goes against the grain. I think you have examples where people have gone against the grain, the Fugees, Miseducation of Lauryn Hill, Kanye West. And I think that those examples were people who took a chance of going against the grain and have been successful. Now, the other thing you're talking about in terms of this negative message or this non-conscious message, I mean, some people would put Jay-Z in that context. I see a transition taking place. Jay-Z did a collaboration with Dead Prez on their last album, which kind of goes against the grain. People would say Jay-Z kind of falls into the bling bling material celebration arena of rap artists. But you see these easy ways of packaging the music and describing the music don't always hold true 100% of the time.
Okay, thank you very much. Appreciate your answer.
Thank you for the call. I think this gets at the argument probably that's been going on about this music for a long time is that does this music have anything positive to say?
Right.
And I think that for a long time, going back to the beginning, a lot of people have said, well, yeah, that we are talking about some artists at least doing social commentary, doing political commentary, actually using this as a way of saying something. And then, you know, maybe some artists that don't. And maybe that's sort of always been the case. But if you were looking for artists who are really, I mean, you might not like what they have to say. You might not agree with it, with what they have to say, but that they actually are trying to say something.
Right.
There are still people who are doing that. It may even be a minority of rap artists, but that's still there.
Yeah, I think it's there much more than people realize. Mm-hmm. I think a part of what we have to understand is that hip hop has been a way for this generation of young people to survive this globalization era. And so I think the music is speaking to that in a wide variety of ways. I mean, even an artist that would be considered not to be conscious, say 50 Cent, the music and what he's saying is still addressing this music as a response to globalization. His album title, Get Rich or Die Trying. That is a response to where we are as a society. I also think that the music has to be seen in a global context. And the ways that young people are using hip hop internationally is very important for many of them as a response to globalization in Indonesia, in the Ukraine, in parts of Japan, where young people have appropriated hip hop in Palestine and used it in very powerful ways to critique the society, to critique how globalization has negatively impacted them and how they're surviving it, which is the same thing that African-Americans have done here. And in my new book, While White Kids Love Hip Hop, I argue that is what many young white Americans are doing. And to see this in the music, a lot of times we have to turn off Viacom and turn off Clear Channel and start to look at what's happening with this music in the local community settings. So I would say go to the spoken word venues, go hear a local hip-hop artists if you want to see what's really going on and what the real messages are and the real diversity of the message. And you can find this in any local community because this is the cultural movement of hip-hop around the country. You can find young people who are celebrating their own local artists, who are making music at a local level, who are engaging hip-hop in some form, even if it's in a spoken word setting. And you can hear a more diversified message of what hip hop is. Always keep in mind that what we see courtesy of Clear Channel and Viacom and Radio One is a packaged version of hip hop culture and not hip hop culture itself.
Yeah. Let's talk with somebody over by Danville, Belgium, nearby community. Line number one. Hello.
Good morning. Mm-hmm. In your last little couple of questions and comments, you've somewhat touched on the topic that I'd like to suggest. And that is, in the punk rock arena, if I know this quite correctly, there's an independent record label by the name of Fat Record, located in San Francisco, who seems to have taken a very strong stance in the most recent election against the parties that are involved. And is there anybody like that in the hip-hop genre, a label that will stand up and say, we do not like things the way they are and put money and effort behind it?
That's a good question. I mean, I think there are many examples of that. The one that immediately comes to mind, first I'd say that much of the most important musical movements ever come out of an independent context. And then the record industry just kind of latches onto that. One example that I can think of is Master P, who started his label independently, did very well, and then the major labels latched on to him. He financially supported a movement that was called the Million Youth March that took place in Harlem. This had to have been maybe 3 or 4 years ago at the 12th hour when they were about to have to cancel the event because of funding. Master P funded the event. So that's one example. I'm sure if I think about it long enough, I could come up with some others.
Well, thank you very much, sir.
Okay, thanks. Now, it's also, we talked a little bit earlier about the first hip-hop convention last June that you were involved in, a lot of other people were involved in. This also involved some people who actually were on the other end, people who were very big names, people who have made a lot of money.
Right.
And they, at least some of those kind of people, they're also throwing their influence
right.
and putting some money behind the idea of, you know, organizing politically.
Yeah. I mean, I think that it's important because, you know, some people would say that is somehow watering down the local political movement. But I think that commercial level of involvement is important for a lot of reasons. One, I think that what you find in hip hop is the extent to which something is perceived as being a part of hip hop, you get much more of a push behind it. For example, Pastor Cavarsier was a song that Busta Rhymes did at a time when Cavarsier sales in this country, in North America, were so low, they were about to pull out of the country. Cavarsier sales are now 70% in the African-American community. So to the extent that something is seen as a part of hip hop, like, you know, the old throwback jerseys or the wearing the white T-shirt or Timberlands. When Timberlands first, when people within hip-hop started wearing Timberlands, in the beginning, the CEO of Timberland issued a statement saying that they didn't make their product for the urban community. So, but still, young people had latched onto it anyway. So to the extent that something is seen as a part of hip-hop, we find young people get with it. Mm-hmm. So I think that someone like Russell Simmons and someone like P. Diddy attaching that, and so did LL Cool J and Queen Latifah, it starts to have a snowball effect such that young people start to see a connection, an intrinsic connection between hip-hop and politics. And I think that is a good thing when you make those type of relationships. The other thing that I think that we're starting to see more of, and we saw this in terms of Hollywood going back into the 50s and even into the present, where you have these wealthy individuals who've made all this money as American royalty and American celebrity, and they're able to finance these campaigns with, you know, contributing to political action committees, et cetera. And I'd like to see that, and I see that becoming more a part of this hip-hop political movement as well.
Yeah. We're coming into about our last 10 minutes or so, and for anybody who has just tuned in, I do want to, again, introduce our guest. Bukhari Kitwana is a journalist, well-known as commentator on hip-hop music and culture, author of the book The Hip-Hop Generation, also one coming out in May, Why White Kids Love Hip-Hop. He's written for a lot of magazines, has been widely interviewed on the subject. He's here visiting, and we'll give a talk later on the U of I campus this afternoon at 4. One time before we end, I'll give you the information on that again. Questions, comments are welcome. 333-9455. Toll free 800-222-9455. Up next, caller in Urbana, line number one. Hello.
Good morning.
Yeah.
I wanted to touch on the last part of your comment there about the money being made, the economics behind hip hop, and if you feel comfortable with maybe the reinvestment. Is there a reinvestment back into the black community to, you know, purchase hospitals and create a professional, the reemergence of the black professional class and things like that? Could you talk a little bit about the money being made?
That's a good one. Well, let's see. Nothing that I'm thinking of immediately comes to mind. I think in terms of, you do see a number of artists that are expanding beyond the hip hop context into other arenas with their money in terms of real estate and other things of that nature, other ventures like the whole hip hop fashion industry. But in terms of a reinvestment in the community itself, I think a lot of that is still not at a level. Hip hop itself, I think, is a reinvestment in the community because within the industry, most certainly, you have a lot of young people able to get jobs in the hip hop industry that didn't exist most certainly when I was, you know, graduating from high school 20 years ago. So, I mean, I think that that is something that hip hop artists are responsible for, the creation of jobs in the hip hop fashion industry, et cetera, the creation of jobs in terms of public relations and a stylist and various people, producers. Such as Kanye West, who started out producing before he became a rapper himself. So, I mean, I think that that's an economic impact. I think hip hop is driving young people to make their own music independently and to be, you know, more entrepreneurial in their approach rather than waiting to get signed on record labels. So I see an entrepreneurial thrust in that regard, but not at the level that you're describing.
Okay. Well, again, other questions welcome. We have time for one or two. 333-9455, toll free 800-222-9455. I'd like to hear you talk more about why white kids love hip-hop. I think something we certainly know is that for a long time in America, white Americans have been drawn to black popular culture. I mean,
right.
that's not new.
Right.
And it even goes back to the 60s, but even goes back further,
right,
in America. So that's not exactly new. But I wonder, and I'm interested because you talked a little bit earlier that you thought maybe for white kids, but for people other places around the world are drawn to rap as an avenue for making commentary. Do you think that a lot of white kids are identifying with the political messages in hip hop, or do they, you know, is it just they like it? It's cool. They can, you know, it's fun, or they like it because their parents don't like it.
I think all of those things simultaneously are true. I think you have to look at it in terms of age groups, because I think a lot of white kids who got into hip hop, say, in the 80s or in the 90s, most certainly at a time when hip hop wasn't mainstream pop culture, it was different. I think now when you're dealing with kids, say, who are at the elementary and high school level, who are observing hip hop, they're not making, in some cases, a distinction between Nelly or Jay-Z and Britney Spears. So this is just the pop culture of our time. What I try to do in the book, Why White Kids Love Hip Hop, is to look at how this younger generation of Americans are processing race in a different way, and to suggest that there is an old racial politics that governs the way we do business around race in America and in the world, and that this younger generation who's grown up living their entire lives in a post-segregation America are processing race radically different for a variety of reasons that extend back into the civil rights movement and the impact of people like Martin Luther King and Malcolm X. And I think that if we start to delve into that space, we can unlock some real real answers and solutions about where we need to go as a country. I think that we haven't dealt with the issue of race. I think that as a country, we continue to rehash the old racial politics whenever a racial issue comes up. And I find it bizarre that as a country, we aren't engaging young people in the conversation about race. Young people who've lived their entire lives in a post-segregation America, you would think that as a country, we would want to have them weighing in on any way that we're talking about race. But yet when we talk about things like affirmative action, et cetera, we rehash the same old racial politics. So this is what the book Why White Kids Love Hip Hop is about: how a new generation of young people are processing race differently, how hip hop is increasingly a refuge for young people who have grown up in America with this changing economy, where the American dream, the idea of what the American dream is for this younger generation, is radically different than what it was for our parents' generation. And the distance between our ability to achieve it and what the dream is and the tools at our disposal to achieve it is so great that young people are feeling a great deal of anxiety and alienation from mainstream America across the board, whether they're black or whether they're white. For black kids, this sense of alienation from the mainstream, hip hop was created to fill that void. I think for white kids, in some cases, as they start to process and deal with these issues, most certainly as you're starting to graduate from high school and to go out into the world and look at what their options are, hip hop becomes a refuge, and the political underlying message within hip hop then becomes very important.
Yeah. Do you think that young people today, that they're finding more in common with one another than perhaps their parents do or would have? And I mean, that's not to say that that race doesn't still divide us, because
right.
it does, but that at least among younger people, it's not as divisive an issue. That is, they would say we actually have a lot more in common than divide us.
I think that we're forced by nature of the economics that we live with to see the things we have in common more. I think we've always had these things in common, even going back into the 50s, that glory day that Newt Gingrich wants to take us back to. But I think that because of the impact of globalization, the commonalities are more clear with things like outsourcing, with things like young people graduating from high school feeling like the military is one of the best options that they have, black or white. For a job that pays them a living wage with benefits. And that remains questionable, as I talked about earlier. So, I mean, I think that young people are seeing more, that they have more in common, and are forced by nature of the society that we live in to engage race. I think that pop culture and the way that pop culture has been packaged in the 70s, in the 80s, in the 90s, provides young white kids with access to African American culture and the conversations that go on between African Americans, this access that is just unprecedented. And so I think that's a part of it. I think that the institutionalization of civil rights culture, such that the civil rights message has become a part of the American story. And so we go back to the Thomas Jefferson ideal of what it means to be American and all men being created equal. And then we incorporate the Martin Luther King vision, the dream of judging people by the content of their character has become woven into the national story of what it means to be an American from the passage of the King holiday under President Reagan to the institutionalization of things like Kwanzaa, the celebration of Afrocentricity and Afrocentric academic theories at the college level, et cetera. So I think all of these things combine along with hip hop to create a different space where young people are able to process and engage race that makes it a radically different time.
Yeah. Well, unfortunately, we come down to the point here. We just have a couple of minutes left. I'm kind of interested in having you talk about where you think the music is going, just because, you know, within popular music, certain kinds of music, they have their moments.
Right.
And they peak. Now, that doesn't mean that people stop listening to them. And artists who come after go back and they refer to them. They take things from them. So in a sense, they never really, really die, but they do have their moments. What do you see as happening with hip hop, and is that going to continue? Is it going to change? Maybe change in ways, you know, we just don't know what the next thing is going to be.
I think that what I see happening, hip hop has demonstrated an uncanny ability to continue to reinvent itself. And right now, I see another one of those reinventions going on. I think the problem that and that reinvention is a return to this local independent level. So you're starting to see the emergence of independent artists who aren't concerned with being signed to major labels. You're starting to see a real big impact with mixtape DJs and this local community, a celebration of local artists and regional artists. So I see that as the cutting edge. But the other cutting edge, most certainly in terms of mainstream hip hop, is, I believe, this transition that hip-hop is making from just being a cultural movement to it being a political one. The problem that both of those movements are up against is that for the first time, we have a situation where the music, in terms of hip-hop, where older people, such as myself and older than me, let's say Russell Simmons, for example, is got to be about 45 by now, as is Nelson George, as is Kool Herc, and Afrika Bambaataa. So you have an older generation that really grew up on hip hop themselves that is listening to the same music that the younger generation is now listening to. And at some point, I don't think that can fly for long. And I think that younger people will create a new music that responds